listening to Undercountry Music with Neil Smith. Digging under the surface, finding the underground country music, news, and interviews, and bringing them to you.
Hello, and welcome to episode 171 of Undercountry Music. This is your show host, your sexy show host with moobs, Neil Smith, coming to you from high atop my podcasting broadcasting tower, overlooking a dying, very tall flower plant, which first got attacked by the sun, then got attacked by spiders, and now is just holding on for dear life. And I set it on top of a dead stump, and I water it every day just to see what it'll do. Anyway, that's what I'm looking down on from my tower. How about you? It's episode 171. Thanks for joining us. Today, I have, I like the raw and gritty artists here on Undercountry Music. And today, I have an artist from Kansas City, Missouri, calling in on the phone named Dusty Rust. How's it going?
I'm pretty good, Neil. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me today and for spending some of your time with the listeners of Undercountry Music.
Yeah, thank you.
I got a chance to have a look at a video of you getting pulled down a street on a skateboard by a dog. And I guess the question I really want to know, at any time during that video shoot, did you totally bust your ass?
Yes, I'm sure. Yeah, it probably happened once or twice. That was actually shot a year or two ago up in Portland, Oregon with my cousin. He had just one of those little flip cams, and of course there may or may not have been a fifth of whiskey involved at that time as well. And they always say, you know, Portland's kind of a weird city and you always see weird stuff out there, and you're doing something weird with even the weird people of Portland turn around and like, yeah, only in Portland would you see this, you know. So
you know you're odd when the weirdos look at you and say that you're weird. Now, when I used to skateboard many, many moons ago, we had the kind of skateboards where if you ran over a tiny rock, it'd go in and get stuck up in the trucks, and it would stop suddenly, and you'd get thrown off of it, and you'd just crack your skull on whatever you landed on. Now, over the years, they seem to have gotten smart with skateboards, and they made the wheels a lot smaller so that if you run over rocks, it doesn't get, you know, caught between the wheel and the body of the skateboard anymore. So what were you riding?
Yeah.
What kind of stick were you kicking?
I was actually a longboard that belonged to my cousin. Actually, he did the artwork on my first record. He's a really good painter and stuff. Yeah, he just had this idea to go out there and do it one day, and naturally, you know, for some odd reason, there's always the whiskey thrown in the mix, but yeah, he just had this longboard. And we were kind of getting used to it just because we had these pretty good-sized hills. And it took us a while to kind of figure out how to learn how to brake on it, you know, using your other foot to kind of slow yourself down. Because, you know, once you get clipping down a hill pretty good, you know, you're just pretty much strapped in for the ride.
Part X Games, part drunken redneck.
Yep.
That's the way we like it. By the way, I didn't announce this at the beginning of the show, but in case someone's listening in who's never listened to this show before, here's what we do here. I seek out people on the gritty underbelly of country music. The people making the kind of music that can only come from their soul, because you damn sure know that what you're listening to on this show isn't going to make anybody any money. That's the whole purpose of this show, to, you know, dig into the people who actually are still making country music, and which is why I brought you on here, because you've got some damn raw, gritty stuff.
My wife and I, we come from like kind of a, you know, a lot of punk rock roots background, as a lot of folks do, that, you know, are kind of the underground country scene, you know, it's kind of happening everywhere. I mean, it's not just limited to country. I mean, it's like, there's all kinds of scenes from like, you know, the bluegrass stuff to, you know, just all kinds of roots music, you know, which is actually kind of funny. We were talking about this earlier. Some friends of mine went out for beers the other night, and we were talking about it, like, and they didn't realize that originally we had moved from Portland, Oregon, which has kind of a cool little country scene going on. There's a couple of really good artists, you know, that like just like talking about real gritty guys that that lay down some real legit honky tonk music. And as you know, music girls are never going to pay attention to any of that. You know, they have, you know, which is fine. I mean, they're into their own thing. You know, they want to make a certain kind of music, and they have a certain, I guess you call it a formula that they want to do. And some people like it, you know, and that's fine, you know, like, you know, that's, you know, I guess, you know, if you like that, be great, you know, if you like my music, great, if you don't like either one, hey, you know, whatever, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just music. But anyway, we had moved from Portland, Oregon down to Nashville because I kind of heard that there was a, you know, really cool scene down there. And so we got down there, got on the Broadway Strip, and I was expecting to see, like, some real badass honky-tonk country music. And mind you, we just sold all of our stuff out of our apartment and everything and bought some old Astro van and took off across the country. And we got down there, and they closed the whole street of Broadway off. And they had a 80s butt rock hair metal band playing a bunch of like Genesis covers.
So you know it's bad when the hair metal guys have to play Genesis.
Yeah, I was just like, whoa. I mean, and hey, don't get me wrong, I'm all down with Genesis, but you know, I was like, that's not what I came there for. You know, I was so that was a shock. And then we went into Tootsie's, and they had a soul band playing, which hey, they were great, they were fantastic, but it wasn't what I was looking for at all. You know, and finally went over to I think it was Layla's Bluegrass Inn, and they had this guy, and he asked us if we had any requests, and my wife asked to hear some Johnny Paycheck, and that guy just about fell over, like, you know, looking at this, you know, beautiful young girl, you know, asking him to hear some Johnny Paycheck. So he was like, "Whoa, what the hell?" You know, and I think they played about 7 or 8 Johnny Paycheck tunes in a row, and we danced our asses off and got pissed drunk, and then I think we hung around for another probably 3 weeks or so, just, you know, trying to see what else was going on. And there's a bunch of cool stuff going on down there. We have pretty good friends down there. But, you know, it was just kind of, we decided to move back to Kansas City because they have, like, a lot of people don't know about Kansas City or never been there. But there's actually one hell of a roots music movement kind of happening here in the city. And part of it's been kind of brought in by the Folk Alliance, which is going on for another 3 years, I believe, here, which we participated in last year. And that's brought a lot of really, really awesome new blood into the city. And
now what really is the Folk Alliance?
The Folk Alliance is a big convention that happens every February. They have a bunch of showcases. It's almost kind of like South by Southwest, but more for like roots music. They try to keep it kind of acoustic, you know, like you're not going to see a lot of drum sets around there. I mean, there's a lot of real traditional style country and bluegrass and some other things.
So in other words, it's like Americana.
Yes, yeah, very much so. And, basically they rent out, like, 3 floors of the Sheraton Hotel here in town, and they take all the beds out of the room and everything or lean them against the wall, and every room has all the free Rieger's whiskey you can drink and all the local breweries and stuff, all their beers in there, and they're just packed full of musicians from all around the world. I mean, we have folks from, like, South Africa, Australia, Germany, there's a couple of these folks from Spain, and a couple of guys down from the South, some of the South American places and stuff, but yeah, it was incredible. And it lasts for about 3 or 4 days. And yeah, you just go up and down these halls and these showcases and meet people. There's people from the media, all the underground radio stuff and podcasts, and guys like yourself come out there and just kind of hang out and kind of good place to just check in with everybody that tours around the country doing the same kind of thing we do all year long.
Well, that sounds amazing. And I'll tell you what, since we've kept people waiting long enough here, so why don't we play a song from Dusty Rust here? We're going to kick off the show with a tune here called Countryside Ride. Is there anything you want to tell people about this song before we get it going?
There's not really much to say about it other than it's just kind of a name that came from a good friend of mine's band up out of Portland, Oregon. His name is Brett Everlean, and him and his whole band, they're just really awesome people, and I didn't really know what else to call the song, so I just named it after their group.
Okay, well, this one kicks us off with some good banjo right here. Countryside Ride. You're listening to episode 171 of Under Country Music. I'm Neil Smith, and I'm hanging out with
Dusty Rust.
Trains, electric cars, and traffic lanes, and sidewalks go on for miles. I got these hours wasted time living here at the 9 to 5. I feel like I'm losing my mind. Well, I've come up with plans tonight. We're heading down the
You know what? That song kind of reminded me, at least in the beginning, of Gentle on My Mind by Glen Campbell.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah, it's got a real Glen Campbell feel to it. That was kind of like, you know, my wife bought me a banjo about 3 years ago, and I've been a telly picker for a couple years now, and the banjo, being especially like a five string, it just, you know, flipped my brain completely around, because you got a, you know, got skinny high string on top, you know, and it took me a long time. I worked pretty hard at it for probably the first 6 months I got it, where I could just kind of get some banjo rolls going, and then and after that, I never really progressed very far after that. You know, I kind of just maybe pluck out a little melody here and there, and I just kind of messed around one day, and I got that melody, and now it kind of sounds like a Glen Campbell song, and yeah, don't get me wrong, man. I know back in the day it was considered pop country and stuff, but I kind of like a lot of that cheesy country policy stuff sometimes, you know. A little bit of Glen Campbell stuff. I can't say all of it, but probably one of the bigger influences on me would be like Charlie Rich, you know, like that Behind Closed Doors record. You know, it's probably one of the masterpieces of record production if I've ever heard it, you know. So
yeah, well, Glen Campbell did some cool stuff. His last album, Ghost on the Canvas, was amazing. The one he did his final tour supporting. It just an amazing, amazing work of art. And his final song, I'm Not Gonna Miss You. Wow. Mm-hmm. Just wow. I mean, you know, it is pop country, but at least, you know, there's some good artistry on that. You know, I don't really care what people are doing, country, rap, whatever. You know, if there's some artistry to it and some creativity to it, I'm good with it. I just, you know, what sticks in my craw is I won, and you know, this is not to denigrate the people I won this from, but I actually won a copy of Luke Bryan's new CD the other day. Mm-hmm. And it came in the mail, and I got to listen to it. There's a lot of drum machines, a lot of electronic beats, and things like that. And every song was just one horrible cliche after another. It was every bad cliche that ever got crapped out by Music Row was just one after the other. But I got to admit, even though with all the people complaining about that, it was completely unapologetic. They're like, you're complaining? Here's it. I'm going to quadruple down on everything you're complaining about. And he just put it right out there, and here you go. And I got to tell you, I can at least halfway respect that, even though the music was terrible.
Artists, you know, you'd like to think that you're all in control of your own destiny. I mean, you know, like, it's just kind of funny. I mean, it just goes along with, like, you know, record labels, like, you're going to do this for us because you're under contract. So it's hard to say, you know, like, really who's behind all that, you know. There's so much smoke and mirrors in that industry, you know, which sometimes that's kind of like what we're kind of trying to do around here in the Kansas City area, is just take the industry out of it, you know, like, where it's just, it's all about the art, you know, like we were talking earlier. I mean, it's, you know, what
well,
you
I
make
think
a
the industry pretty much took themselves out of it.
Yeah, kind of, in a way, yeah, like, you know, you know, they use math and formulas and spots, you know, like you say truck and Chevy and this amount of songs, you know, that you're going to put out here, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe they're giving them $50,000 to do that, which, hey, that ain't a bad paycheck, but, you know, I mean, but maybe that's just part of what they're, you know, as being an artist or what they're seeking. I mean, maybe it's just the monetary gain, and that gives them affirmation to what they're doing.
Well,
you know?
I can't blame anyone for making a buck, but when the music becomes about nothing except making a buck, when the music itself doesn't even come into the calculation, you know, then that's where I get lost right there. I'm here chatting with Dusty Rust from Kansas City, Missouri. He's just been putting out some great gritty stuff out there. And I wanted to ask you, since we're talking on the subject of money and everything like that, I'm not going to sit here and ask you how much you make from what you do, but it's obvious that with the style you're playing and what you're going after, money isn't the driving force behind it. So the obvious question I need to ask you is, what is driving you to make music that isn't something that's going to be a big money maker for you? Or maybe someday it will be, but as right now, it is not the style that's cash and paychecks.
Yeah, certainly not. You can get by as a musician if you're in the right city, or you can keep your rent low enough. And if you book yourself out just far enough, you know, you can kind of just scrape by. I'm fortunate enough to have the support of my wife. She works right now as a waitress, you know, and we're kind of just getting scraping by. I was working as a general contractor up in the Portland, Oregon area for probably the last couple of years, and I was a union sheetrocker trade and in a union outfit for probably 10 years before that. And I'll tell you what, man, like, just the stress of that job after a while and some of the people that I worked with. Don't get me wrong, I had some great friends out of the industry and stuff, but it was such a thankless, soulless job that it basically, like, you feel like an absolute nobody, just a nothing all the time. It's like the only people that stare at walls and ceilings more than I did are either in insane asylums or in prison.
Or in prostitution.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Well, they're mostly ceilings.
Depending on what kind of acrobatics they're into, I suppose.
Well, yeah, it depends on their pay grade, I guess.
So, yeah, I just kind of on the verge of this, you know, like, man, just needing to make a change in my life before I just suffered a meltdown. And so we just kind of, I was playing, like, as a hired gun for some indie rock bands out of Portland, probably in my late teens and early 20s for a while. I'd done a couple tours and really wanted to get into the music industry just because I love being on the road and I love meeting people all the time, you know, and I just love the lifestyle that goes along with it. And, you know, it's just kind of amazing. Like, everyone talks about how violent things are in the U.S. and how, you know, there's all this division with politics and all this stuff going on. But it's pretty amazing when you just get out and you just get into people's homes that you're maybe sleeping on their couch or something, and you realize how awesome people really are and can be, you know. I mean, there's, like, you know, for all going on out there, there's some pretty amazing stuff, you know. People are just pretty amazing. So just kind of craving that kind of lifestyle. And then so what we did, solo our stuff and all that, and I decided I wanted to just make my version of what I think country music records should sound like.
So is Portland where you call home?
No, Kansas City is now. Yeah, we have
no, no, but probably. I meant, is that your original home? Because I was reading a bio on you, and it said that you moved away from home not to find yourself, but to find others and relate to them. But it never said where home was.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess home would be Portland, Oregon, I guess. At least the last home was. And yeah, now we found ourselves based out of Kansas City. But yeah, we came from Portland, Oregon. And that was the other thing, too. Portland, Oregon has become very, very expensive to live in just the last couple of years. With all their public transportation, they have a lot of good benefits as a city. And then everybody and their brother is trying to move there right now because there's quite a few jobs floating out there with Intel and Nike and all those big corporations. And so they're just moving everybody out there. And our rent literally jumps like $400 a month with 30 days notice. So we decided, man, we can't afford to even live in the city anymore. So we just decided to get out of Dodge. And that's the kind of thing about Kansas City that's been nice, especially being an artist, is the affordable housing around here is awesome. I mean, you can get a studio apartment for next to nothing. There's all kinds of good music happening around here. Musicians are incredible around here. And not only that, as a community, like, everybody's very inviting. So if you come up and tell everybody, well, I play guitar or play this or I'm a songwriter or whatever, people are very accepting, like, oh, awesome, you know, like, come join us at this jam night or this circle, you know, as opposed to some music scenes where it's not... you know, it's not as accepting. You know, there's, like, a lot of competition. Like, if you were to go down to Nashville or Austin, you know, there can be kind of a clique. And unless you know somebody you're having in, you're probably, you know, not going to be, you're going to be a little shunned or something.
Yeah,
know?
That's definitely, a lot of that is here in Nashville. But there's also a lot of great souls. A lot of writer's round nights, what they call writer's round, where you show up with your guitar. Well, you normally want to sign up for the writer's round, but usually it's pretty easy to get on them. And then you show up and you sit on the stage with four other artists and you each take turns playing, you know, a song. And it's a lot better than an open mic, because instead of sitting there and listening to someone for their 10 or 15 minutes and that you're not familiar with, in a writer's round, you've got three or four different artists taking turns for half an hour or an hour. It keeps it interesting, because let's say the guy you're listening to sucks. Well, that's okay, because you've only got, you know, you're 1.5 minutes away from hearing somebody completely different, you know.
Yep.
And not only, it's really nice when they're all great. And a lot of times they are all great here. But, you know,
Mm-hmm.
But that's a real interesting thing I encountered when I moved to Nashville, and that's a lot of fun. But anyway, so you loaded up the Airstream trailer and hit the road. So I think that gives us a nice segue into our next song here called Airstream Trailer. Was this have much to do with your travels and getting out of Dodge and going out to find the good in other people?
Yeah, actually, it was actually co-wrote by a guy that I worked with for a long time. Actually, I worked for him. He was my boss at one of those commercial companies, and he's one of the big time bosses. I mean, the company probably employed 500 people, and so he'd walk down the hall, and we'd have to put our backs against the wall, you know, because you know if you made eye contact, he might fire you, which is pretty funny. Actually, I'm kidding. He's a really nice guy, but I'm sure he'll probably be listening. So I just thought he'd probably enjoy that, but. Yeah, so he comes aside, pulls me aside one day, and then he asks me about, he's like, I heard you play guitar or something, you know, and so he wanted me to come over to his house and give him guitar lessons, and so I did, and he showed me that he actually knew a couple chords, and he'd been writing some of these songs.
And then he fired you.
Yeah, then he fired me right then. He said, yeah, that's kind of what he was talking about. He actually kind of encouraged me to get out, and he said, you know, the problem is you know, the drywall is always going to be here for you, so, you know, if you don't, you know, get out and, you know, do your art now, you know, you're going to get older and wish you would have spent all your younger years making art and stuff. And so he'd show me this kind of the sketch of the song, and so we kind of helped each other arrange it and write it out, and it does have a lot to do with kind of the adventure to come, which actually wound up happening, being where we landed from Nashville to Kansas City. And yeah, it's just kind of a I guess it's called like a sketch of sorts about the adventure. So,
okay, well then, without further ado, here's Dusty Rust and his song Airstream Trailer. You are hanging out on episode 171 of Under Country Music with Neil Smith and
Dusty Rust.
Stream Trailer. Dusty Rust is hanging out with us here on Under Country Music. Dusty,
Yes, sir.
Hey, I was wondering, that sound on the guitar, I was wondering, were you picking really fast, or was that a vibrato effect?
No, that's me picking on the guitar. That's just a Tele with a lot of reverb on it. Kind of, just, real quick picking, I guess, on it. And I don't really use effects when I play. I don't, other than like this little reverb here, and just try to keep things real clean. I mean, I love pedals. There's nothing against them. It's just, it gets to a point though that, you know, if you're like me and you don't maintenance your stuff real well, and you don't change batteries out, they'll die on you, and then you got to go through your circuits and figure out what the hell died on you and all that good stuff. And it creates too many hassles live, and I've just kind of gotten accustomed to playing my Tele always just straight into a little Blues Junior amp. So.
Well, because it sounded like one of those vintage oscillators.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, so that's why I was asking. It just sounded like you had the oscillator up like super, super high on a vintage amp. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, they used to make these amps with oscillators in them, and what that was is the speaker. Well, either the speaker or the port where the sound would come out, there was this thing that turned around, and you could gauge how fast it would turn around and let the sound out, so you get a lot of that wah, 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 and that's like someone picks the guitar and it goes wah, 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 or wah, 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 wah. That's what that is, the oscillator.
The only thing I'd probably like to do sometime, and maybe the next record or something, real similar to what you talked about, would be like an old Leslie speaker cabinet or something. I always thought that sounded pretty cool through guitar, and kind of like Sturgill Simpson in his last record, he came up with some really awesome, like a lot of 1960s production techniques on their record to get that, really awesome sound that they did. I mean, definitely one of my favorite more modern records. But listening to that record kind of inspired me a lot of the production on this one that we made, which we probably started working on it about 10 months ago when we first moved to Kansas City. And I'd refer back to their record quite a bit because I love the sound they were making. And a lot of them are pretty simple, just.
So your new record, is it out right now? I know you're hitting the road and you're touring the Northwest in support of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just came out. I think it was July 14th, I believe was the date. Whatever the Tuesday is around there.
And so, what's it called?
It's called Kansas City Cowboy.
That's what I thought. I was looking on the internet, and I was having a tough time finding information about you, like bios and things like that. I really had to do some digging, but I did find a real interesting nugget, as long as we're talking about vintage styles of recording, is that actually your first self-titled album you recorded yourself from 2013, and you did it completely on analog tape.
Yeah, I actually did it on an old what they call a Tascam 388, which is actually if anybody listens to the Black Keys very much, their record Super Super Thick Freakness actually was recorded on the same machine. It's just like a part of it's like eight tracks of like eight channels, so it's like a mixing board and a reel-to-reel all in one. It records straight to like quarter-inch tape. And I had bought this thing.
So it's just recording to quarter-inch tape. So this isn't even like a 24-track, 2-inch tape, nothing like that. This is eight tracks on a quarter-inch.
Yeah. So it's pretty much the equivalent of recording to a cassette tape, pretty much. So, like an old, one of those old cassette 4-track recorders.
Yeah, I had one thing of those. I've actually had a couple of those in my time.
Yeah, I love them. I think they sound fantastic.
Bouncing down tracks. I remember those days where you'd record on three tracks and then you'd bounce it down to one, and that would free up the first three tracks again. You'd record on two, bounce it down to track three, and then you'd have two tracks left to do whatever you needed left.
I love working that way. It's such a linear way of thinking. I mean, there's no going back. I mean, you got to play what you're playing right then and there, you kind of have to think about the songwriting and the arranging before you start, usually, if you want to map something out. And
yes, boys and girls, a long, long time ago, there were these mythical creatures who could play instruments and sing and who were well rehearsed and actually knew what the F they were doing and didn't rely on auto-tune and 5 million takes and punch-ins in the studio. Well, I mean, we had punch-ins, but, you know, but that's the way it was done.
Yes. And I love working in that format, and that's what I want to do. And I mean, a lot of songs, I'd spend a couple hours writing them, and then as soon as I get to the chance, I'd, you know, throw out an acoustic guitar, and that would be, you know, the acoustic guitar you hear on the record, and then go back over and play the drums to the acoustic guitar, you know, and try and, you know, map it out like that, and then turn around and maybe put the vocals over that, you know, you know, I never considered myself a real good natural singer, so it took me probably the longest to do the vocals, so I try to get that out of the way first, and turn around, lay the bass down, and then kind of put some lap steel on there or some celli, you know, and just try to make it sound like the way I wanted to sound, which is a gritty-ass old honky-tonk record.
Well, you certainly achieved the gritty-ass honky-tonk record sound. Now, you're taking this sound, and you're touring the Northwest here. When does this tour start? It starts next week or this week?
Yeah, we're actually leaving. We're leaving Monday morning. We're turning the keys to our apartment, so we're not paying rent while we're out of town.
So wait. You're going out on the road. You're basically packing everything you own or putting stuff in storage, hitting the road because housing's so cheap that you don't care. You've got a disposable home, hitting the road, and you'll just get another place when you come back.
Yep, exactly.
Wow.
That's kind of been the way we were doing it. Like we just got really serious about our music in the last little bit, and you know, like I said, it's obviously not financially driven, but
how much is a little studio apartment in Kansas City, Missouri?
You can find. I mean, hell, it's not uncommon to find something to rent for $425 a month, depending on where you look. You know, if you get a roommate, obviously, you can find some stuff even cheaper. We spent a little bit more on ours just because. You know, it's just easy, you know, better security, and you know, I've got a bunch of, you know, I record at home, so you know, I try to be a little more cautious and keep my stuff protected. I don't want to have to deal with theft or anything. But I think that's what's attracting a lot of artists to move to Kansas City because of the affordability. I mean, you look back to, like, you know, the early '70s in New York and Brooklyn, you know, where all those like the Ramones around there and all that, how they could afford to live there and have their art. I mean, can you imagine, like, trying to be in a punk band or trying to, you know, where nobody likes your band in the first place, you know, trying to survive, you know, like, play your music and supply yourself with drugs, like, you know, in Brooklyn today. I mean, you'd have no chance if your rent was $2,500 a month.
People still do it. They still find ways to do it.
The economics is a little bit tied in with art. Like, if you can cut your cost of living down a little bit, I think it frees you up to be a little more dedicated to your music.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
They're already starting to, slowly but surely, we're starting to see the population grow. Even just the last year that we've been here, I've seen more artists move into town. And I'll tell you what, too, it's been fantastic. I mean, we've had great artists come into town. Like, a good friend of mine, Jody Hendricks, owns a small record label here in town called Little Class Records. And a bunch of good friends of mine are on that label, including a guy named Pete Berwick, who's an old cowpunk pioneer. I actually played on his record, and another good friend of mine, Josh Morningstar, who just released a record and got a couple of really awesome reviews on a couple of blogs lately. I did most of the guitar work on his records, and these guys, and those other guys, I mean, they're on the road all the time as well, and like I said, every day there's like two or three more folks show up. Like, who's this? Not only that, they show up, and you're like, okay, all right, we'll get them on stage, just, you know, open mic. They get up there and it's just, they'll just blow you away. You know, it's just like, holy crap. Like, what the hell's going on? Like, what are they putting in the water around here?
Well, that's amazing. How far are you from Branson?
Branson, Missouri. I would guess, I haven't actually been down there yet, but I think we're about 3.5-4 hour drive from there. It's funny you say that. I got a bunch of friends that are from that neck of the woods. And
now, is Branson mainly a tourist trap where you go see the Oak Ridge Boys Review and stuff like that? Or is there actually stuff going on there that's interesting and unique?
I've heard different versions of it. I mean, there's no doubt there's some killer talent musicians that come out of that area. I mean, because I know a couple of them personally. A lot of them say that, yeah, it's a little touristy and a little, I heard it's a little run down. Like I said, I couldn't tell you that from personal experience. Like I said, I've never actually been there. Just, you know, just stuff I've heard. And I think my buddy, a lot of the folks that I know that are actually from Springfield, Missouri, which is not too far from there. A good friend of mine, Tyler Giles, he's out of there. And then also Chad Graves, we call him Gravy. He plays a band called the Hillbenders. I don't know if you kept track of them and all. They just Rolling Stone just started writing about his band, the Hillbenders. They just did a bluegrass version of the Who record called Tommy, and they just totally redid it all bluegrass. Rolling Stone just called it, like, I think it's the 27th or 28th best record of the year so far out of the top 30. So he's staying really busy playing around, and secondly to me, they're close enough to Branson. I would call them, you know, probably roughly from that scene, or if not, knowing, you know, folks out of that scene.
Yeah, I was just curious if that was a place where you could go and build yourself up, because we hear a lot about Branson here in Nashville, or if it was just a place where old country acts and other, you know, Donnie and Marie and stuff like that, and you go and you just see their theater show. Since we're talking about going on the battlefield of touring, we're going to play a song from Dusty Rust here called Epic Battles. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about where he's going to be on this great tour of the Northwest. And since he's ditched his home, maybe he'll just decide to extend that tour and just make it the whole U.S. while he's at it. I don't know. We'll talk with Dusty Rust here when we come back. Dusty, is there anything you want to tell us about the song Epic Battles before we get into it?
Epic Battles? But probably one of the biggest problems that came to producing the record. For some odd reason, it turned into that song to record, and I don't know what it was, but I probably re-recorded it 4 or 5 times, and I think you're listening to probably the 5th version of the song.
That's usually the way it goes. The one that ends up is the last one that you do. But I've had them before where I've recorded something a couple times, and the re-recording wasn't as good as the one I did before. I said, okay, well, let's just do the other one. That turned out better.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, man. Like, it seems like you get into it, and then the harmony's always off. Or maybe you're tired because, you know, you've been working on it for a couple hours, and then your ears get tired, and then you listen back to it the next day, and you're like, oh, man, that sounds like hell. I gotta scrap this whole thing.
Well, you know what? Sometimes I'll record something, and I'll listen, and something will bug me about it, and then a week or two will go by, and I'll hear it, and I go, well, that sounds great. Because I forgot what it was that bugged me about it a week or so ago, and then all those little things because I've distanced myself more from it, and then I'm like, then I can't remember what I thought sounded terrible, and then all of a sudden the song sounds great to me, and I don't see anything wrong with it. It's like, oh, well, okay, then put it out.
Yeah, I think it's a perspective thing, you know. If you can give yourself enough time, you know, like, your ears have a way of playing tricks on you, you know, and you listen to things for too long, or you get nitpicky about this or that. Yeah, I think you're right, man. I think just stepping away from that, that's a great way to go.
Anyway, here's the song Epic Battles from Dusty Rust, who is hanging out with me, Neil Smith, right here on episode 171, Under Country Music.
Table, move your hat and look around. Cause everybody there has a different story. Some are crazy, but most of them are profound. Yeah, the roads we choose and the paths we travel, the ones we love. The ones we leave, it's always stupid things that lead to epic battles. Things are said that cannot be retrieved. Gotta have a full glass of dreams and whiskey. I'm a Wile E. Coyote cartoon, or so it seems. Pianos keep falling, barely missing my head. Makes me stop and think about everything you've said. Yeah, the road we choose and the paths we travel, the ones we love and the ones we leave. Things are said that cannot be retrieved. Twist you up in perfect days that'll make you shine. The random circumstances beyond your control make you laugh and make you cry at the same time. Yeah, the roads we choose and the paths we travel, the ones we love. It's always stupid things that lead to epic battles. Things are said that cannot be retrieved. Yeah, the roads we choose and the paths we travel, the ones we love and the ones we leave. It's always stupid things that lead to epic battles. Things are said that cannot be retrieved.
Some more of that great banjo picking that I don't really think you give yourself enough credit for, Mr. Rust.
Well, I mean, you know, like I said, if it wasn't for some good friends of mine here in Kansas City that play a hell of a lot better than me, you know, I probably would go to my head and I'd think I was maybe something special, but the problem is I know far too many better pickers than me, so I just, you know, like I said, I'm just fortunate enough to be around to be able to learn from some guys that really, you know, really can pick. So I just, like I said, I just try to always improve and keep learning from some of the best I can get in close with to be able to learn stuff, you know.
Now, when I plugged your name into Google, because I was trying to learn more about Dusty Rust, I bet you can imagine what came up in my search results.
Oh man, hopefully the FBI is not going to be knocking on your door soon. I mean,
no, yeah, I'm trying to figure out. I'm imagining Dusty Rust is not your real name.
No. Huh?
Okay,
no,
I won't. I won't make you divulge your real name unless you really want to.
Yeah. No. The moniker kind of comes from. I'm always, you know, people don't get it, you know, a lot of times they first meet me, but I'm really big into self-appreciation humor. You know, I just find it funny when you tear yourself down for some odd reason. And so Rust actually kind of comes from some of my guitar tail playing, you know, like, you hit some clankers here and there, you know, you hit a couple, bend the notes the wrong way, and all of a sudden, you know, I thought I'm a little rustier than the rest of the polished world. So, you know, I just thought Dusty Rust was a good fit for, you know, especially just wanting to play like older sounding country music. But
so then you
may or may not be appreciated.
Well, that means that you don't know what comes up when you do a search for Dusty Rust.
For the most part, no. I mean, I have Googled it before, and I know the website comes up there, so you can go like
DustyRust.com. Well, let me enlighten you. Dusty Rust is the name of one of the characters from the movie Cars.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie Cars?
I have never seen the movie Cars, no.
Okay, well, there's these two old cars, and they're the sponsors of Lightning McQueen and with the Rust-Ease medicated bumper ointment. And and now the two, one of them's named Dusty Rust that makes the Rust-Ease medicated bumper ointment. And these two cars are voiced by the car guys, you know, Click and Clack from NPR.
No, I don't think I've listened to that.
The two brothers that do the car talk, well, one of them died, so there's only one of them left now. But before he died, they voiced the characters who were the sponsors for Lightning McQueen in the movie Cars. And so Dusty Rust is one of those rusty old cars from the movie Cars.
Interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I think the last the last Pixar type movie I've seen was probably Ice Age, I think.
And, well, let's hope Pixar doesn't come knocking on your door.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, like, so what makes you think you could just take this moniker? Yeah, I thought about that. You know, I thought about that and maybe thinking about an Airstream trailer. I'm like, oh, maybe they don't want to be associated. And like, yeah, well, I mean, if they want to sue me, I mean, I suppose they could, but, probably wouldn't pay out too well for them.
No, I don't think it would, but it might be something more like a cease and desist.
Yeah, whatever. I'll cross that road when I get there.
Yeah, I guess so. That's what you call a good problem to have when you get enough notoriety to have that happen. It's like I had SOCAN contact me, and the Society of Canadian Composers and Artists, and this lady from Canada contacts me by email because she's trying to see if I have a license for the music artist that I'm playing on the Spreaker rebroadcast of my show.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's just one problem with that. The Spreaker rebroadcast of this show doesn't contain any music. Period. So, in other words, that means she had never listened to the show. At all.
Just trying to hit you up.
It was just a random shakedown.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't believe, what's funny about that? I do all my own booking and stuff right now, all these dates are playing. Some of these smaller towns that I actually love to visit, I call some of the local bars there because I know they have live music. I've seen it posted. Interesting enough, I call some of these places, and this guy, at first I'm like, I heard you guys do live music, and he gets suspicious with me right off the bat on the phone.
Oh, yeah, ASCAP and BMI pull that stuff all the time. They go in there and they shake down venues, absolutely.
And I thought it was kind of funny because I'm like, these bars are out in the middle of, nowhere. It would cost ASCAP so much money, or BMI, the biggest agent, which, wouldn't surprise me if they have, some guy in a three-piece suit and sunglasses, over to BMI, they'd have to take the plane ride out there, which would cost them, however many hundreds of dollars, and all the amount of running a car and getting the gas to drive all the way out to these places that are out in the middle of DSC,
Well, what they do is they hire people for somewhat low pay to go sit in there and then to see what's happening, and then they come back and report it to ASCAP BMI. Matter of fact, there's a karaoke company by the name of Sound Choice, and they hire people to go around to places with karaoke, and they wait for one of their products to come up on the screen. And if it's something that's Sound Choice, then at the end of the night, they go over and they ask to see the discs or to see the Sound Choice license or whatever, and say, okay, well, we'd like you to submit to an audit to us. Either that or, they threaten to take him to court. It's just intimidation tactics and shakedown, even though they can't prove anything right there on the spot.
Yeah, it's kind of a new thing. I think they probably had a decrease in royalties, whatever. Just, how the music industry's changed so much. And now, what they're trying to do is just, make more money through, really enforcing something that they never did before, because while I guess there's maybe some legality to what they're doing, I think, a lot of it's, scare tactics or whatever else. And I wouldn't be surprised if they slap a fine somewhere here and there to show, well, we will do this, this could happen to you or whatever. But, yeah, I don't know. It's.
So are you saying I shouldn't have responded with the words, blow me?
Yeah. Well, you probably could, and nothing's probably going to happen, especially if they're from Canada. I mean, an international lawsuit, the cost behind that. If you really want to go there, good luck.
Well, the only artists I play are ones that have given me direct permission, either that or their PR firms or someplace they've submitted their music has given me direct explicit permission to play the music. Like, you know, like yourself, you've given me permission to play these songs. So that's why I'm able to do it. And, you know, I don't know. Are they registered with Canada?
Well, they're not registered with Canada. They are copyrighted with the U.S. Copyright Office and BMI. But I do that for self-protection, you know, like as opposed to, you know, like it's all a matter of like, you know, because, hey, people do funny things, you know, and you know, I guess the biggest thing is, you know, you don't want your music to show up
at like a Klan rally.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to have to, let's say they use the Airstream trailer to go to a Klan rally, you know, and put that as their, you know, political
or
thing.
Epic
like,
battles.
I don't want that. You should have a right as an artist to choose that. And, you know, if you're not protected through BMI and copyrighted, they could probably tell you to go screw yourself and, you know, you wouldn't have the legal leverage, I suppose.
Well, Dusty, I'll tell you what. Why don't you tell us, because we're in the closing part of the show here. Tell the folks, number one, where they can find you on the internet. And then, secondly, let us know what dates do you have coming up in what cities. Now, keep in mind that this show is going to probably actually surface to the world about 1 week after we're speaking.
First off, we're going to be, we're hitting the road starting on Monday. We'll be touring
Monday the what?
August 17th. So we're going to have a couple days on the road, and we'll be starting at the Ice House in Murray, Utah, which is just south of Salt Lake City, I believe. And then from there, we have a long drive back up to the northwestern side of Oregon there. We're playing a couple private house shows out there, and then we'll be playing at the Burke in Birkenfeld, Oregon, which is a really neat little tavern. If anybody ever goes out to Portland, Oregon, they should look up the Burke out in Birkenfeld, Oregon. It's this beautiful drive out there in kind of a coastal mountain range out there, kind of cool little roadhouse. Wendy and Michael in the place, fantastic people, great food, cold beer, you know, great little road trip. And we're playing my buddy Tim Hawk's bar out there called the Landmark Saloon in Portland, Oregon, right after that, which is a really cool little house that converted into like a bar and a great little hardwood floor. And it's not very big, but people get in there and dance, and it's crazy. I mean, you get 35 people in that bar, and it's packed, you know, and people still dance in there, even when the cane hardly moves. And then from there, we're going to go up to Seattle, play the Little Red Hen, kind of doing some more stuff in some, like, Heppner, Oregon, some smaller towns. And we're actually going to spend a lot of time on my parents' farm over there in Idaho. So we're going to play in Clarkston, Washington, a place called Rooster's Landing. And then eventually making our way out to kind of Montana and out through there, back through Denver, Colorado, a couple dates in Nebraska. And then after about, I think it should take about 30 days around the dot, and then we'll be back in Kansas City. So all the dates can be found at www.dustyrust.com. And just go to the show's link, and you'll be able to find it all there.
So Pixar didn't get the .com.
I guess not. No, I think I beat him to it. So I'd sell it back to them gladly for probably...
that could finance you for a while.
Yeah. Well, they'd probably give me the money, and I'd wind up spending it on microphones, not being able to resell them, you know. So I'd be, you know, I'd just be forced to make more records, you know.
Oh, so, that'd be too bad.
It'd be horrible, yeah. Well, but So, and if anybody's interested in the records and stuff, you know, you can buy them on iTunes, or you know, if you guys come out to any of the shows, we can, you know, we'll sell you a CD or whatever and a t-shirt, you know, to keep a little gas in the tank, you know. Beyond that, you know, and if you don't want to pay for it and you have the free version of Spotify or whatever, it can be streamed on there as well.
Nice. But I would encourage everybody to go to dustyrust.com and buy stuff, you know, buy a shirt, buy a disc, buy the stuff, you know, that works for you, of course. But, you know, you like this music, you want to support these artists and keep real, real gutsy, gritty country music happening. That helps a lot. That just helps more than you could ever know. But anyway,
yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to get into the wrap up here. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have no frickin' idea how you stumbled across this show or by what means you're listening to this show, first off, I would suggest that you cut back on the sauce And then secondly, if you'd like to subscribe to this show and get it in your ear all the time, each and every new episode automagically, I would suggest that you subscribe to the podcast. Now, I normally would say subscribe on iTunes, which you most certainly can do. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. But honestly, if you're on an Android phone or whatever, you know, screw iTunes. Just get any old podcasting application for free out of the store and just do a search for Under Country Music on the podcast app. It should pop right up for you. And just hit the subscribe button, and it's just that easy, and you have it on your phone wherever you go. And you can go back through old episodes or whatever the heck you want to do. If that's kind of if that's something that's maybe a little tough to figure out for you, you can always go to undercountrymusic.com, just like it sounds. I'm not going to spell undercountry music for you, because if that's a struggle for you, then you probably ought to go back to school before subscribing to my podcast. And also, you can listen on your Stitcher smart radio app and other places and stuff. And you can listen to the Under Country Music News on Spreaker.com. So, yeah, that's the one where the Canadian lady with the flapping head got all up in arms about was my news show, where I round up the week in country music news, except for the fact that it doesn't have any music on it. I'm just talking about the week in country music news. So there, you freaking Canadian with the flapping head. There you go.
Sounds like a South Park reference.
I know. I can't think, you know, every time I think of the lady from SoCan, I picture the whole top of her head flapping around while she talks. So
yeah, she probably did that while she was typing it, too. She like spoke every word.
Yeah, the whole top of her head was like flapping. That's great. Yeah. It was the whole song, Blame Canada, right? That's why they got to stick up their butt now. Anyway, Dusty Rust, I want to thank you for coming and hanging out with me and chewing the rust for an hour. By the way, is it true that you can remove the rust from a bumper with a can of Coke?
Yep, absolutely. Just go to my merch page. I got a can for sale right there. It's DustyRust.com. Go to the merch tab, and I'll sell you a bottle of it right then and there.
You know what? You probably ought to sell, like, rust, you know, old car rust solution and stuff like that. That'd be a great merchandise item for you.
It would be. Like I said, all you gotta do is slap them. I got a name. My name's written on this logo thing. You just gotta slap it right on there, you know? And yeah, absolutely, man. You know,
just put a label over a Coke can.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, anything, you know?
And sell a six-pack of Coke. Yeah, a six-pack of Coke. Just put Dusty Rust labels around it. Car rust treatment.
Yep, whatever it takes to keep gas in the tank and keep the van rolling, man.
That's what I'd do for the price of a couple of... See, I'm teaching you how to scam your supporters here.
Yep.
Except in this case, it actually works. Anyway, we're going to get out of here with a song of yours called Happy Father's Day. And the reason I chose this one is because it talks about, you know, hitting the road and leaving at the beginning of the song. And which I thought was a nice segue to get us the F out of here. So is there any words of wisdom you'd like to impart about this song or anything else on your mind before we hitch up the wagons and get the heck on out of here?
Oh, not much else other than just folks, you know, if you wouldn't mind coming out to the show, if it's on the schedule, we're going to be close to town near you. We'd love to see your smiling face, you know, out there. So,
no, wait, when you say we, you mean you and your wife?
Yeah, it'd be me, my wife playing bass, and my friend Icolette playing drums. I'll be kind of doing like a Junior Brown thing. I got like my lap steel and my guitar. I just got to double up on those.
So you're a trio. It's not just you out there beating the songs on an acoustic guitar. You got it. You got a little trio going on.
Yeah, no, it's much rowdier than that. Yeah, no, it's a trio. And depending on how much whiskey we get bought before the show, it can turn into a hillbilly rock and roll show real quick. So we gotta watch our intake. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you catch on that kind of a night, it can get pretty rowdy pretty quick. So.
Well, nice. Well, Dusty, thank you very much for hanging out with me here. I really appreciate you taking the time to call in. I want to, you know, be safe on the road.
Lots of coffee and cigarettes, and we'll be as safe as we possibly can.
Well, I'll be praying to the good Lord to keep you safe while you're out there on the road, sir. And you and your wife and your drummer. And
yep, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure. And you know how we get out of this show here? Stay under, stay country.
Listening.